Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I'm grateful you chose to be with me on this 28th day of February 2021 as we take a look at another series of why. I get a lot of whys. Why this? Why that? I can get a long, long email from someone, a listener, and then in and throughout all the information that they're giving me, or the rant, usually, they're telling me little things about themselves and about how they question the practice that I offer, or the practice in general. And then why this, why that, why this, why that? And they think that that sustains their skepticism, as it were. So another why series here. And I think you'll find it interesting because these whys are things I think most people have thought about or consider when they listen to what an authentic spiritual practice is. And you must remember something. Most people are not interested in an authentic practice. They've already come to conclusions about their life. They already think they know everything about their life that there is. They are YOLOs, you only live once kind of people, most of them. They listen to the radio program, I think, out of curiosity, but mainly it's really about they've come to a conclusion that fits their mental acuity, and they don't want to go any deeper or any further into anything other than just what they're thinking and pretending and believing and all of that. And they just want to go on, and they're okay with living without substance, without significance, without authentic meaning. They're perfectly fine with that. I just got off the phone with one of my colleagues who's perfectly fine with that. They just don't care. So I think the world can take a lot out of a person. I really do. I understand. The world's a difficult place to live, and we have lived in this world of difficulty for a long, long time, especially during the pandemic. And I think it's taken its toll on people. I really do. I think that a lot of people that contact me or listen to the radio program just really don't understand what their life is all about. They don't really want to know what their life is all about. So I get all that. I really do. I understand it. And it would be an easy thing for someone to fall into if they wanted to, if they weren't very adept at what the meaning of life is. And then when you share with that person the meaning, they reject it. So it goes on and on and on. It's a never-ending cycle. Human beings are filled with intrepidation and cynicism, and they're condescending at best. Let's go to the first question from Ray. Ray does not tell me where he lives. He said, he goes into a litany of what he thinks is good and what he thinks is wrong and what he thinks is right and all of that. And then he says in the middle of his email to me, why is good so difficult, so hard? If it were and it came from God, don't you think it would be easy, Ray? Ray, the universe, and I'm just going to say this world that you and I are in currently, they do not operate like we'd like to think they would through our logic and reasoning. It just doesn't work that way. It is not logical. It is not theoretical. It's not any of that. There's some basic principles in this lifetime that go on and on and on. These basic principles are about our livingness, the meaning of our livingness, the compassion of our livingness. It is the quality of us that matters. And for the most part, we don't do that quality very well. We don't live in that quality very well. We just don't have any sense of the quality of consciousness that lives within us as a precursor to our life. So it is very hard for us to understand good. good is not always what we think of as good. There can be many difficulties in the course of a lifetime that we must go through that are good. They basically are, because they perpetuate some sense of insight and love and life later on down the road. It happens that way. I've had a lot of things that in my life that didn't seem so good, but the way I handled them turned them into a pathway that led me to another place and another place that was far better than the one I was in. And you can start to look at this from all sorts of different angles, you know, and say, oh, this tragedy, it happened and it is heartbreaking. But if you hang in there and you don't judge it, you start to understand it's bringing you further and further and deeper. If you use your tragedies, if you use what you would call the bad things in your life as a pathway, a path, not judging what is happening, accepting, as Lhotse said, disgrace willingly, and just moving on. Moving on the path, not repeating your, well, maybe your actions that electrified the situation. There's an old Zen story, a Taoist story, I think it is actually, about the man who brought a horse home. And when he brought the horse home, the father of the son that brought that horse home, they all said, oh, how fortunate you are. And he said, well, we'll see if I'm fortunate. I'm paraphrasing this very quickly for you. And then when the whole thing with the horse happened, more horses came to follow the horse that was brought in because he was the leader, and everybody thought that that was a great deal. And he said, I don't know, we'll see. Well, in training the horse and the horses, the son broke his ankle and couldn't help the father with the farm. So now they said, oh, just these terrible things have happened to you due to bringing in the horse. And he said, well, we'll see. I don't know. And then there was this great war that was happening in his region at that time. And they were drafting young men, but they didn't draft his son because he had a broken ankle. And so the neighbors came and said, oh, this was really good fortune for you, but you know, the horses and breaking the ankle and all of that. And the father says, I don't know, we'll see. It just goes on and on. The story goes on and on like that. You don't know. I don't know what good is. And if you take good a sense of gratitude for whatever it is that happens, you will understand something, and it's something I have learned very deeply, and I highly, highly suggest this to you, okay? I have found that good must turn into goodness. Goodness is following the way, the goodness of your heart. You must find the authentic heart and the goodness of it, and you must live in that goodness no matter what you do. You follow the goodness of your heart, and sometimes when you're on the path of some things that have been very, disappointing to you, if you sustain goodness, if you live in that goodness that within you, those things that happen to you, you're given the vision, the insight to see a bigger picture, something more profound than the situation itself. And you start to realize, if I follow this setback, whatever it is, I'm on the path of something that I've never experienced before. I don't know what will happen. So here's what I've found. Ray, I hope this helps you. Goodness follows mercy. The more merciful I can be, the more in difficult times that goodness appears. And I start to really see it for what it is and not for the way I think good should be. So I had a friend who had a trust fund or was given a trust fund, and he was very happy before the trust fund occurred for him. He had no idea this was really going to happen to him, and he came into all this dinero, and his life, as he told me, he said to me, has been nothing but misery. It's filled with complications and worries and concerns and moral obligations and also immoral obligations, all sorts of things. And he looked at me and he said, you know, my life was a lot simpler and a lot better when I didn't have the money. So I said to him, give the money away. No, he wouldn't do it. He said, Greg, I just can't do that. So he couldn't follow the path. The goodness that came, he had no mercy to follow the path and use the money, get rid of it by giving it to organizations and people who needed it. He just couldn't do it. So here we go on and on and on in this misery, on and on and on in this stuff, as it were, that we get involved in and we miss. We miss the opportunity for mercy to bring us goodness. Now, I'm going to say one last thing here, Ray. Goodness is not always what Greg and Ray might think of as good. There are many merciful things that are given to us in the form of mishaps and misfortune. And if you're of a person of consciousness, where you have developed a sense of consciousness, you will understand that. And you will not fuss and fume over the petty, as I always call it. So if you're a wise person, you'll hear what I just said, and that will help you immensely. If you're not, you'll only be confused. And I think a lot of us live in this world because we don't know the difference between good and goodness and following the goodness, no matter what seems to be happening in our life that doesn't seem so good. I hope that helped you. Please forgive me. Namaste. Hard questions to answer in a logical way. Next one comes from Terry in San Pedro, California. Why is consciousness so difficult? I meditate, but I don't seem to achieve consciousness. I'm in the midst right now, Terry, of a series of discourses and such to help my students prepare for retreats and workshops. And it's all about consciousness. It's called Christ Consciousness. And I'm talking about the teachings from the Gnostic Gospels about what Jesus taught in consciousness, about consciousness. These come from teachers and teachings that I had in India so many years ago, the Essenes, and I find them to be most attractive. When I was young, I listened to them and I absorbed. But now I find that they're more than absorption. They're actually essential to the meaning of life, the meaning of my life, the meaning of your life. Consciousness is difficult for many reasons, but one of the main reasons it is because only through consciousness do we arrive at awareness. And this means I have to be, well, available. And most people are not available. They've already come to definite conclusions about their life, about what they think of as what is good, what is bad, what is right, what is wrong. They've already come to a totality of their life. They have a scheme for their life. They have all sorts of mores about their life, things they do, things they wouldn't do. They have many, many aspects of their life that they're involved in that they believe makes their life true, makes it true to form. So they miss a great deal of what it is to have a livingness, a true, authentic livingness. So here's one of the main things that keeps us, Terry, from achieving a state of consciousness. We are not willing to cut the ties that bind us to our earthly life, to our physicality, to family, to the human body. We're just not willing to cut those ties because it's student after student that I have, and I've had them for years. They still think the same thoughts over and over and over and over again. Oh, I won't be able to earn a living. I'll just be a vegetable. I'll be stupid. But the real, and they already are, but the real, the real meaning of it all is that if they do cut the ties that bind, if they really do, they're not going to be the same person anymore, and they're going to find out who loves them and who don't love them. They're going to find out that people are petty and jealous and vengeful, spiteful, even their mates. And you see, people marry us because we are a certain person in their eyes, in their belief system, and we fit into that kind of prejudice, that kind of bias. And when we fit there, we think, oh, this is my soulmate, which isn't true. There are no soulmates. So you start to look at it and you think, oh, this person is, you know, passing the test here, 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 and here. They must be right for me. When that kind of thing happens, we lose consciousness. When we choose to have people in our lives that depict our sense of bias, our prejudice, we diminish our ability to enter into consciousness. Now, I'll bet I can go into your life, and if I were allowed, and show you, well, you sold out here, you sold out there, you sold out over here, you went over there and sold out over there, and you're not willing to cut any of these ties because they're gratifying and because they sustain your low self-esteem, blah, blah, blah. I bet you I can do that. Bet you I can. And then you would look at me and say, well, these things you can't cut. You, I can't let go of this person or that person, blah, blah, blah. I'm not telling you to go out and get a divorce. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying to you, you have to begin to understand what you're all about. It is the support of your low self-esteem. You have no idea what you are. You only think you're a who you are. And to be honest with you, even though I don't know you, Terry, I would bet you dimes to dollars that you probably think that without these people, you're a nobody, you're a nothing, you'll be alone. And if you can't be alone with yourself, which is the litmus test for being loving and authentic, then you're missing. You're missing your whole life and the intent of your life. So when you start looking at it from what I just gave you, is it any wonder that you don't have consciousness? You can't, because what you're trying to support here is your low self-esteem. You're trying to avoid it and find adoration and affection in order to sustain the human experience that you're willing of and the only thing you're willing of. And in living in that way, oh, we miss so much of what is important in our lifetime. So there's why you probably don't have consciousness. Now, to rectify the situation, you just have to understand what Socrates said. Be true to yourself. To thine own self, be true. What self, though? Are we talking about the human self, or are we talking about this other self? What we often call in the work a higher self. I don't particularly call it that, but to me, it's the Christ consciousness, the Buddha nature. It is the consciousness of love. And that should be the most important thing in your life, is authentic love, not human love, authentic love. Love that gives you a sense of, what shall we say, your spirituality. The depth of your spirituality, the depth of your relationship with the universe, the goodness of you. Now, with all that being said, what kind of consciousness do you think you have? And I think if you're honest, you'll see you're not interested in consciousness. You're interested in an easier life. You're interested in love being affection and life being subservient to your needs and wants. That's it. Think about it, Terry. Just think about it. Please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question. This is from Lucille. She does not tell me where she lives. I like that name. You don't hear the name Lucille much. How do I touch and live forgiveness? She heard this from a radio program I did on forgiveness is a lifestyle, not an event, not something you deign on people, but rather it is the way you live. So I guess basically you're asking me, what does the lifestyle of forgiveness look like? It looks like not attaching to either this or that. No more this, no more that. Matey, matey, neither this, neither that. That's how you live. So you are not offended. And when things happen that are difficult, you are not offended. You are not going to look at it and get all bent out of shape and think how unfair this might be. You simply understand everything in proportion to your own life. Nothing happens in the life of the Gregory Penn that shouldn't happen. I have learned this many years ago. Nothing happens that shouldn't happen. It happens because the Gregory is the Gregory. And in your case, the Lucille is the Lucille. So whatever it is doesn't mean it's bad or wrong or even good or right. What it matters is that this is the consequence of living in a human body, in a human carcass, with human beliefs and human ideals and human wants and needs. So with this as the consequence, if I'm wise, I won't confuse it with myself or having a self or the value of the self. I will just see it for what it is. Oh, this is what I've come to. When I have difficulties in my life or even blessings in my life, I look at it from the point of view of, oh, this is what I've come to. I've come to this. Now, what am I going to do with it? Am I just going to squander it? Am I going to use it to help me awaken further, whether it be something that is quote-unquote good or quote-unquote not so good? How am I going to look at that? How am I going to deal with that? How am I going to live with that? That is the real question, not, oh my God, this happened, what a terrible thing, or oh my God, this is such a good thing, what did I do to deserve it? I don't think in those terms. If you think in those terms, you're going to miss what is really happening. And it has nothing to do with the circumstance. Look behind the curtain. Look and see what is going on. What mechanism inside you is moving and moving on and working right now. See the mechanism for what it is. Don't get caught up in the trappings of the outer. See the inner. And if you do, you'll understand very quickly. You'll see everything is based on what Buddha taught. See how you love and what keeps you from the journey. Hope that helped you, Lucille. I love your name. Thank you for writing me in your kind comments. And please forgive me. Namaste. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back next week. Please forgive me for all of this. And if you have any questions, always feel free to email me at greg@aspire.org. Have a wonderful weekend. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.